Once upon a time, radio was a one-way operation. Signal to receiver, take it or leave it. And with more than 200 million people tuning into commercial radio every week, it's clear that the old model is still very much alive. But advances in technology are ushering in a new era of possibilities. Internet radio, satellite radio, and now podcasting give listeners many more choices, both in terms of what they hear and when they hear it. In this hour, a panel joins me to talk about trends in the radio industry. But first, this news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Three men have been indicted on charges of plotting to attack major U.S. financial centers in Washington and New York. The men are in custody in England. NPR's Laura Sullivan reports.
The three men were picked up in sweeps across Pakistan last summer. Law enforcement officials say their computers contained evidence the men had been scouting buildings such as the New York Stock Exchange and the International Monetary Fund in Washington. That information led to the raising of the terror threat alert in August, which lasted until November. U.S. officials confirmed one of the men is Abu Isa al-Hindi, a British terror suspect of Pakistani origin. Al-Hindi, who goes by a number of aliases, also shows up in the 9/11 Commission report. According to the report, 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed sent al-Hindi to the United States to scout financial targets in early 2001. He also may have been given two of the 9/11 hijackers' contacts in Southern California. Laura Sullivan, NPR News, Washington.
President Bush's choice to be first national intelligence director is telling senators his plans to reform several agencies. John Negroponte says the security of the United States is at stake.
In the past 4 years, our homeland has been attacked, and we have miscalculated the arsenal, if not the intent, of a dangerous adversary. Our intelligence effort has to generate better results. That is my mandate, plain and simple.
If confirmed, Negroponte would oversee 15 intelligence gathering agencies. Most of them have been lambasted for not working well together and for failing to prevent the September 11th terror attacks. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld is in Iraq on a one-day visit. He's met with top U.S. generals and Iraq's new government. NPR's Lourdes Garcia Navarro reports.
As the formation of Iraq's new government drags on, the Secretary of Defense did not mince words with the new leadership here. In meetings with both the newly chosen Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafari and President Jalal Talabani, Rumsfeld said that he was concerned about corruption in the ministries and possible purges in the security forces. Critics have noted that although Jafari has yet to name his new cabinet, the ministries are being divided among the new government along sectarian lines. The fear is that knowledgeable technocrats will be ousted in favor of cronies of the new ministers. Rumsfeld also said there is no exit strategy for Iraq. Any pullout will depend, he said, on the readiness of Iraqi forces. After meeting with Rumsfeld, the top U.S. general in Iraq, George Casey, told reporters that things were improving, but there is still a long road ahead before Iraqis could take charge. Lourdes Garcia Navarro, NPR News, Baghdad.
On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials are down 67 points at 10,381. The Nasdaq is down 14 points. It's at 1978. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Jeep. Introducing the trail-rated Jeep Liberty CRD with next-generation diesel technology, emissions and performance capabilities at Jeep.com.
From KJZZ News in Phoenix, I'm Terry Ward. Arizona Congressman Jim Colby is supporting legislation to repeal the military's ban on openly gay soldiers. Colby is one of three openly gay members of Congress. He's a co-sponsor of a bill that would scrap the 12-year-old Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Replacing it would be a provision barring discrimination based on sexual orientation. Adopted in the first year of the Clinton administration, Don't Ask, Don't Tell prohibits the military from asking about the sex lives of service members, but it also calls for the discharge of any service member who acknowledges being gay. The Arizona House has approved a medical malpractice bill. despite warnings that a provision would make it nearly impossible to file even legitimate claims. Representative Steve Yarbrough says a provision tightening the requirements for the credentials of expert witnesses to testify in court would do more harm than good.
Presently, it is very difficult to find medical experts who will testify against a colleague, even when the medical malpractice is egregious. With this new restriction, it will likely approach the impossible.
The bill passed on a 31-19 vote, the bare majority needed for approval in the 60-member House, and returns to the Senate for expected acceptance of House changes. The Catalina Foothills High School chess team has won the U.S. Chess Federation's national championship in Nashville, Tennessee, beating hundreds of other schools at the tournament. The Catalina Foothills team also clinched the national speed chess tournament title last week. In speed chess, players get 5 minutes each to complete all of their moves. Sunny skies in the valley forecast for today, heading for a high expected to reach 88. It was 81 yesterday. Overnight readings near 60. And then into the 90s for tomorrow. And Thursday looks like into the weekend, at least through Saturday. Temperatures right around the 90-degree mark. Right now, clear, and it is 70 at KJAZZ at 906.
KJZZ is supported by the 22nd Annual Glendale Jazz and Blues Festival, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, April 15th through the 17th at Murphy Park. For more information, call 623-930-2299. Glendale, have it both ways.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane Rehm. The Telecommunications Act of 1996 had a dramatic effect on the radio industry. Small operations were bought up by major companies and, in many cases, eliminated small and sometimes quirky radio programs. But advances in digital technology seem to be reversing that trend. Satellite radio, internet radio, and now podcasting are becoming increasingly popular additions and, in some cases, alternatives to traditional commercial radio. Joining me in the studio to talk about how the radio industry is changing, Mark Fisher, covers this, the subject for the Washington Post. You're also writing a book about radio, right, Mark?
I am indeed.
Lou Paper is an attorney specializing in communications law, and from the studios of Sirius Satellite Radio in New York, Jay Clark, who's their executive vice president. Welcome to you all, gentlemen. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
You can join us as well, as always, at 1-800-433-8850 or drshow@wamu.org is our email address. I want to start with a general question, Mark Fisher. In some ways, radio is the oldest medium we have around. First commercial radio, 1922, is a long time ago. Its demise has been predicted many times. Why is it still around and so healthy, you think?
Well, its demise was first predicted when TV came along in the early 50s, and all the programming vanished virtually overnight. And so no one could see a future for radio. But as it turned out, radio became, in many ways, even more essential than it had been, thanks to the fact that Americans moved a significant chunk of our lives into the car. And radio was the only communications medium that could reach into the car. And so the purpose of radio changed from this sort of mass entertainment medium, with soap operas and comedies and all of that stuff, into a very service oriented medium, providing music, sports, traffic, weather, news, and all of that. And that made radio a very intimate presence in our lives, and it has remained that up until very recently, when new technologies have come along that have questioned radio's dominant role in the car. The other factor there is that radio got kind of lazy and provided increasingly homogeneous programming, kind of bored.
We're going to get to that in a minute, but I want to talk just another minute about the nature of radio, because I think it has own special qualities. And Jay Clark, one of the things that I think all of us who have done both TV and radio have noticed is that when you talk on television, people say, well, you needed a haircut or they liked your tie, but they don't remember anything you said. When you talk on radio, I've had people quote chunks of the Diane Rehm show months, even years later. What is the special quality of radio, Jay, you think, that people can really remember and follow arguments much more closely than on television.
Well, I think it's the most intimate of all of the media, and the reason for that is because of theater of the mind, and I know that's kind of cliche, but it's a reality. If people are listening right now in their car, and there are two people in an automobile, one person's picturing me as a 23-year-old or maybe 30-year-old redhead, you know, maybe 6'4".
I don't think anybody's picturing you that way, Jay.
Well, in my fantasies, maybe. And other people are picturing me as, you know, maybe a 55-year-old guy about 5'10". So the idea here is that, that they get their own personal picture. And once they get that in their mind, then it becomes very intimate to them.
Your take on this, Lou. You look at this from more from the point of view of a lawyer, but... you listen to a lot of radio, and you think about the medium. Why do you think it's still here after all these years?
I think it does provide a service that no other medium provides, in the sense it's not only in your car, but you can take it in your shower. You could take it to the beach. There are many places you can take radio where no other medium can go until recently, with iPods and things like that. And also, I think it does provide a lot of information that people find useful. There is still a big emphasis on programming that is local, that provides local news, local information, and people still are very interested in obtaining that. And I think that is the strength that I think most radio operators rely upon in keeping radio alive.
Now, obviously, there are a lot of changes that have been happening, and as you started to mention to Mark Fisher, one, of course, was the Telecommunications Act of 96, and you started talking about the fact that this very local, almost quirky, described as mom-and-pop, a history of radio, started changing earlier than that, but really was accelerated by 96. Quickly give us a sense of what really happened.
Well, radio from the 50s on had become more and more local. Back earlier in what we call the golden age of radio, the 30s, the 40s, the big radio networks out of New York dominated. So most of the programming that people really were in love with was national programming. Mm-hmm. But after TV came along...
Which you can still hear on WAMU and Ed Walker's big broadcast. Yes.
Absolutely. But later, after TV came along, radio saw that its real service was to be very local and to provide news and traffic, mm-hmm, and weather of interest to a particular community. Well, in later years, as more and more stations were added to the dial and stations wanted more programming, the technology came along that made that possible. So we had syndicated programming and an increasing consolidation of ownership that culminated in 96 with the Telecommunications Act that basically stripped away almost all of the remaining limitations on how many stations a company could own. That brought about a consolidation of programming so that big companies said, you know, we can provide big city quality programming to small towns, mm-hmm, out in the hinterlands, and in doing so, they thought they were perhaps providing higher quality, but certainly providing much more higher profit, more profitable programming.
But was it also a lot more homogenized, a lot
blander? Yes, and so we saw both in terms of talk programming, which was national, if you think of Rush Limbaugh, Howard Stern, and so on, and the music also became much more distant from its community. Playlists were drawn up by corporations rather than by local programmers. Local music fell off the dial, and the whole sense of what kind of music you would hear was developed in a much more national scale, much more removed from the listeners.
Lou, you talked about the joys of local radio. Do you think Mark's right that a lot of this became much more homogenized under these few corporate owners?
Well, I really don't. I think in this sense that whether programming is developed at the corporate headquarters or locally, when you're sitting in your car or at the beach listening to your station, you listen to the quality of the program, and it doesn't really matter where they've chosen the music, as long as you like the music and the quality of the programming in terms of local.
But clearly, but the listenership to some extent has fallen off. There's been kind of a drifting away, hasn't there, from sort of these big prepackaged one-size-fits-all stations?
Well, no, I think that I believe that a lot of the consolidation has resulted in improved quality of programming, because a lot of the mom-and-pop stations that you refer to didn't have the resources to provide high-quality programming. And I think a lot of the larger companies have put a lot of resources into providing programming. Now, it's true
How much resources does it take to put a 300-record playlist and just punch a button and play the same songs over and over again.
Well, if that's all the station does, maybe that's so. But I think, first of all, they're much more sophisticated. I think today that stations and companies are far more sophisticated than these mom-and-pop stations were in selecting music and selecting programs that they think are responsive to the needs of the community. And I think a lot of money and time and effort is spent into finding out what will work for the reasons you mentioned, because I think that there's a lot of competition today for people who want to listen to radio. And so a company that wants to survive and do well had better pay attention to what its audience wants.
Let me bring in Jay here. One of the reactions to this consolidation and that came after 96, accelerated by 96, and of course the new technologies made satellite radio possible. Now, this is still pretty much in its infancy, but give our listeners a sense of how and why this has grown the way it has from your point of view.
I have to disagree with Lou on a couple of points. First of all, I think that the larger companies to a bottom line did take away a lot of the localism, and that's just a fact. And they also took off news and local news. You don't hear local music on many stations. If you go to markets like Pittsfield, Massachusetts, yes, one station survived and is really very local, but it's locally owned. The others are all very homogenous, and so I have to disagree. Now, I'm not saying that the big companies haven't researched and haven't done a good job of programming, because I think they have. It's just that the one thing that they had that made them really stand out, which was localism, I think has gone away. Now, that said, one of the nice things about competition is that everybody's looking at that now and trying to figure out ways to get back into that business. And I think for an industry that I grew up with and has been very kind to me over many, many years, that's a good thing. And I think that what's happening is a good thing. Now, getting to your question, which is, what is our technology? I think that first of all, we have 121 radio stations, basically, out of one building. 65 of them are music, which allows us to do just about anything that you would want musically, from pop to very, very deep cuts and classic rock to classical music to jazz. And we not only have those genres, but we have a number of stations within the genres. So if you want memories, for example, and you grew up in the 60s, well, then you have classic vinyl. If you want something a little bit deeper or a little bit harder, we have Buzzsaw. And I think the other big difference between us and commercial radio is just the business model, in that our music is commercial free. Now, what that allows us to do...
But you get the revenue, you get the revenue from subscriptions, not from commercials.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There obviously is a charge here. But what that does to the listening experience is it allows us to keep people in the mood that they want to be in.
But
Quickly,
we're about to go to a break here. But you do lose that local flavor that you thought was so wonderful.
Yes, you do. There's no doubt about it. And if I was a guy who owned a local radio station, I would take advantage of that.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break here. But I'll be back with Lou Paper, Mark Fisher, Jay Clark, your comments and your calls. More about the many changes in radio, so stay with us.
KJZZ is supported by Arizona Department of Revenue, reminding small business owners that they can file and pay TPT and withholding taxes online. Details at aztaxes.gov.
Now, Wall Street's trading lower this morning. The Dow is down 75 points right now. The Nasdaq is off 15. Final numbers, the rest of the day's business news on Marketplace tonight at 6, right after All Things Considered. Traffic shows an accident 7th Avenue south of Rose Garden Lane with the emergency crews responding there. Also Glendale east of 7th Avenue and Sossaman in Mesa just north of Southern Avenue. An accident reported there as well. You're listening to The Diane Reeb Show with Steve Roberts. This morning on KJAZZ, it's 9:20.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane, and our subject this hour is radio. Obviously, all of you who are listening are familiar with this since you're tuning into us, and so you're all presumably interested in it. Lou Paper is with me. He's an attorney specializing in communications law. Mark Fisher writes about radio for the Washington Post, working on a new book about the subject, and Jay Clark from Sirius Radio, satellite radio in New York. I'm also going to bring in J.D. Lassica now. He is on the phone with us. He's co-founder of Our Media. He's author of a new book called Darknet, Hollywood's War Against the Digital Generation. Welcome to the show, J.D. I wanted to pick up on something that Jay was saying just as we went to the break. This question of everybody says that the great strength of radio is that you can get your local weather, your local traffic, your local ads, your local news, and yet satellite radio washes all of that out.
Well, not all of it. I mean, we do have traffic in the 20 largest markets, and because we have the channel capacity we have, we're able to do probably a better job than the local radio station would unless they became an all-traffic or all-weather radio station. So with service elements, I think that we can, at least for the bigger markets, take care of that without a lot of trouble. Now, when we do this, and I want to make this very clear, we're doing it over the entire spectrum. So you can, for example, tune into Sirius satellite radio and hear New York traffic and weather even though you're in Los Angeles.
Lou, you wanted to make a point on this.
Well, I think that Sirius does provide a high-quality signal, and I think it does provide competition to what we call the terrestrial broadcaster, the radio as we know it. But I think, going back to your earlier point, Steve, I think from the local broadcasters, I think that they realize the competition that Sirius and XM provide by having commercial-free radio. And I think the way they want to combat that is to provide programming and that is local, because that is the key, from their perspective at least, one of the key distinguishing features in trying to keep listeners from going to satellite radio.
Mark, you want to add something?
Yeah, you know, as Jay said, this is a grand opportunity for commercial radio to recapture that localism that it lost over all these years of corporate consolidation. But sadly, commercial radio is generally not equipped to do that anymore. They've already fired all the local news reporters. They've gotten rid of the local DJs for the most part. What they have left is a machinery that is set up to provide nationwide programming, and without any of that local feel, the period when DJs would appear at local high schools when they were intimately familiar with their audience. The audience craves that, and yet commercial radio is now so far removed from it that it's going to take a leap of imagination for them to get back into that game.
Interesting point. J.D. Lassica, are you with us now?
Yeah, sure.
I want to ask you about, I know you've written a lot about podcasting, and also you're an expert on online communications. And one of the dimensions here that a growing number of people are taking advantage of is listening to the radio on their computers. How does this fit into this picture? What's the significance of that?
Sure. Well, I would agree with the other speakers that, or the seven speakers, that commercial radio is basically dead. It just doesn't know it yet. People are tuning out of this kind of stale and formulaic, homogenized, predictable kind of formulations and turning to podcasting and satellite radio. I don't necessarily want to lob a hand grenade in here, but I don't honestly believe that satellite radio is the future of radio. I love satellite radio, and I subscribe to XM, but at a certain point, it doesn't become commercially feasible for XM or Sirius to offer more than a few hundred channels of programming.
And how many can one person listen to? I mean, more than a few hundred, you sound like this is just a handful.
Yeah, this is Jay, by the way. And
wait, just a minute. Let me have JD answer, please. Go ahead.
Sure.
Yeah, well, let me explain what podcasting is. Podcasting is basically TiVo for Internet audio. It's the ability to subscribe to certain Internet shows or audio files and have them show up on your iPod or portable player, where you can listen to them at your leisure. So it's basically audio to go, audio on demand. And once you've got it on your device, you can pick and choose what you want to listen to. You can fast forward through the boring parts. There's no defense you know, no offense to any radio hosts out there, but from the podcaster's point of view, it's really insanely easy now for just about anyone to launch his or her own radio show. And it doesn't mean setting up a tower in your backyard or anything like that. All you do is you record your voice onto your computer, you turn it into an MP3 file, you upload it to a site like ourmedia.org, and boom, you've become a broadcaster, and hopefully you have something to say. Just a warning about costs, we've had a large number of people come to Our Media because we offer free bandwidth. So we're a nonprofit site, and we think that you shouldn't be socked with large bandwidth bills if some of your shows become popular.
Talk about, and then I'll let everybody else jump in, but this is a new concept. It's less than a year old, and a lot of our listeners not familiar with this phrase, podcast, but it's been described as the blogosphere of radio, and in effect what people do is you use the computer as sort of your organizing medium, and people go to certain sites and then can download programming directly to their own devices. Is that essentially an accurate description?
That's right. It all began back in September when Adam Curry, who's the former VJ for MTV, he became the first podcaster, and now there are podcasts about business and politics, religion, computer, sports, you name it. And so today there's somewhere north of 10,000 different podcasters out there with listeners running into the low millions, according to some estimates. But it's just beginning to take off. And remember, just a few years ago, nobody ever heard of a weblog, and now there are 8 or 9 million blogs out there. And we're seeing the same kind of growth curve with podcasting.
Jay, you wanted to get in on this. Please, your comments.
Well, my point here is that we have 121 radio stations, and our average listener listens to about 8. So I think that one of the questions I would have is how they find them, and will people who are over, let's say, 35 or 40, have the time to deal with this on a regular basis. I think it's going to work. I'm not poo-pooing the technology. Or actually, what it does is it allows the commercial broadcasters and for that matter, satellite radio people to find programs that are really going to work. And then what will happen is we'll pick those off as we go forward. But I do wonder how many of those channels people are going to actually lock into.
Well, just a minute. Mark, I want to bring you in here. Let's also make the point that while J.D. said commercial radio is dead, it's still got over 200 million listeners. So
right.
It's still around.
It's awfully premature to count out commercial radio. And, in fact, I think we're seeing very, very strong signs just in the last weeks and couple months that commercial radio is poised to make a big comeback, because commercial radio is ready to absorb some of these new technologies and some of the lessons of these new technologies. For example, there's a format that's sweeping the country. I mean, stations are being added at the rate of a couple a day. A format that's known variously as Jack or Bob or Mix and Doug, Ben, all these names that are meant to signify that this is a format that's very different for commercial radio. What they're doing is they're taking a lesson from all these people who are out there with their iPods and saying, we're not going to have a 40-song playlist or a 300-song playlist. We're going to have a 900-song playlist, a 1,000-song playlist, and we're going to do all the things that our research has told us in the last 20, 30 years we really shouldn't do. We're going to run songs from the 70s up against songs from right now.
Are these independently programmed stations, then?
Well, the big companies are jumping aboard in a big way. It started in Canada with a handful of stations, but big companies such as Clear Channel are realizing that they have restricted themselves way too tightly, and they've turned off a good chunk of their audience.
Now, Lou, I want to ask you about another innovation here, which is HD. Just a minute, about HD radio,
right?
Which is another dimension of this, where any individual station can now broadcast more than one stream of programming.
Right, and that's one of the points I wanted to make, is that one of the things before you declare commercial radio dead is that there are technological changes that are occurring that will make radio, terrestrial radio, commercial radio as we know it, more attractive. They'll bring in digital sound, they'll bring in the compression and the flexibility of digital broadcasting, and AM stations, for example, will have a higher quality and will make those stations a lot more appealing and much more like satellite radio. The other thing, a point to keep in mind...
But also, in addition to clarity, it's said that AM will sound like FM, FM will sound like a
right.
CD, but also that it allows commercial stations to stream more than one source of programming, right?
Correct. And that's correct. And so they'll have more sources. And I think the other important thing to keep in mind before we declare commercial radio dead is that we're not talking about a static pie in the sense that there's only a certain amount of listening that people will do, and it has to be divided up among these various technologies. I think the advent of a lot of these new technologies will bring in more listeners, more uses, so that there may be people, the amount of listening will expand as technology expands.
Now, we are also broadcasting right now on public radio, which is in a very important part of this universe. And before we take calls, J.D. Lasica, public radio has enjoyed an enormous increase in listenership around the country. How do you explain it, and what's the role in this universe for public radio?
Well, I think that public radio sort of fills the gap that people are looking for. Instead of being talked to in this kind of commercial setting all the time, people are looking for issue-oriented programming and the sorts of things that you don't hear with a selection of 14 songs on a playlist. But beyond public radio, there are other kinds of opportunities that are coming right down the pike. Later this year, Motorola will be rolling out a new technology called iRadio. That's potentially very exciting. It basically turns your cell phone into a radio transmitter and uses some kind of black magic to turn over control of your car radio to you instead of to the commercial radio outlets. So it enables the consumer to have their choice of hundreds of channels of commercial free radio and talk, and to also be able to access podcasts and their MP3 collections wherever they happen to be on.
So this would be this would come from through your phone line, not your satellite.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Through local cell towers. And so we're seeing this whole combination of push and pull technology. So, you know, commercial radio may not go away overnight, but it's going to have to be supplemented by, instead of just the push kind of technology where it's a mass medium of undifferentiated kind of content, you also want to have the pull in there too, where you can access the stations or the channels or content that's important to you, pull it down off the Internet.
Mark, quickly, I want your take on public radio since you look at the whole universe here. Your explanation for its growth, role in this, as you see it, in this changing marketplace?
Well, public radio's growth has been among people who want more in-depth news and talk than is available elsewhere in the media environment. And they've gotten that through National Public Radio. What they've lost is the local programming, particularly musical programming, jazz and classical, and the other minority interest formats that have been very seriously on the wane in recent years. And that's because this news audience is much more involved, because it's a depth of news coverage that is really not available in other broadcast media.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show on public radio. And our number is 1-800-433-8850, drshow@wamu.org. Let's turn to some of our callers. Lots of folks want to join this conversation. And we have James in San Antonio, Texas. Welcome to the Diane Rehm Show, James.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Happy to have you.
I was calling. Really, it seems to me, I look at radio kind of historically, and it seems to me that it's provided a community experience on two levels that you haven't really sorted out yet. First, broadcasting addresses a particular community, ideally, when it's local radio, but also you have people listening together to radio. And I don't get the sense that either the new technologies or the new business models really do either of these things anymore. That, you know, radio's kind of become this solitary experience because people are running around plugged in with their iPods, but ironically it's pretty much the same solitary experience that everybody else around them is having. And real quickly, just...
Well, hold that point so we don't lose it.
Sure.
Jay Clark, what's your reaction to that?
Well, I think the radio has always been a solitary experience. As I said very early on in the conversation, it's theater of the mind, which means that it's an individual experience for any person who is listening to it. So, again, you know, somebody's picturing me one way, another person's picturing me another way, or they're looking at the studio and picturing the studio differently. And that brings radio into a very personal situation for the listener.
Mark, you have a different take.
Yeah, the beauty of radio is that it is simultaneously that one-to-one intimate conversation, and it builds a sense that you are part of a community. The community of listeners to the Diane Rehm Show is a group of people who have something in their imagination about who each other are. There is such a thing as NPR America. It's a definable group of people with similar values. And that's true whether you're a fan of a DJ who takes you through the evening when you're a teenager, or someone who listens to this program. And what radio is in danger of losing because of all these disparate new technologies is that larger community sense. And the caller is exactly right. The podcasting is an exciting new technology, much like blogging, in that it gives individuals a voice, but it does not create communities. Satellite radio is somewhere in between. It creates this sort of affinity community. If you go to xmfans.com, or Sirius has a similar site, people who love satellite radio are coming together on the web and talking about it. There is a definable community there, but it's not a local community, and it doesn't serve that political civics function that radio has served in the past.
James, another quick comment you wanted to make?
Yeah, I mean, real quickly to respond, I was the theater of the mind is a nice image, but frankly, I was thinking about teenagers riding around listening to the same broadcast in the car together, or my family and I sitting and listening to the radio in the living room, and we are not having an individual solitary experience. We are having a common experience. But I real quickly did want to defend local public and college radio, because frankly, I don't listen. I'm in the home of, you know, Clear Channel and all the evil things that it has done, but
this, of course, is the biggest of the... just a minute. I need to expound to our listeners what Clear Channel is.
Okay.
It's the biggest of the corporations that have now owned, I think, about 1,200 radio stations. Okay, please, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. We've got two vibrant college radio stations, and they really do provide localism in a way that radio doesn't. Plus, our two public radio stations here in San Antonio, KPAC and KSTX, have local programming, and the classical station has local programming, and it really makes a difference.
That's going to have to be the last word for this segment. Thanks very much. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. We'll be back with more calls, more comments, more questions about the future of radio, so stay with us.
National broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by members of WAMU and its underwriters, including Allergan, Chevy Chase Bank, and the Fannie Mae Foundation. Additional support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the Pew Charitable Trusts, serving the public interest through information, policy solutions, and support for civic life, online at pewtrusts.org. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Before Eleanor Roosevelt and Hillary Clinton, there was Nellie Taft. A new biography of the 27th First Lady shows how she was the first to do more than simply stand at her husband's side. A look at the unconventional First Lady of the ragtime era. That's the Diane Rehm Show, next hour.
KJZZ is supported by LifeWise Health Plan of Arizona, offering simplicity, choice, and value through a variety of PPO medical plans, including health savings account plans and more. Details through your broker or at LifeWiseAZ.com.
Oh, we have a high-pressure system kind of camped out over Arizona, pushing temperatures up to near 90 degrees the next few days. The system will kind of break up and bring slightly cooler weather and perhaps some breeziness into the weekend, but we won't see much cooling. Right now, 72 at KJAZ. You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. It's 9:40.
You don't have to know a lot about classical music to listen to it. This music speaks to everyone with its beauty, energy, and power. And the only place to hear it on the radio is 89.5 KBAQ. So whether you're 16 or 60, got your PhD, or watch MTV, this station, this music, is for you. Explore and enjoy it on your classical companion, 89.5 KBAQ.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. Our subject this hour is radio, and particularly commercial radio. We're talking a little bit about NPR as well. But I've got four experts with me. Lou Paper is an attorney specialized in communications law. Mark Fisher covers radio for the Washington Post, is writing a book about it. Jay Clark is with Sirius Satellite Radio. And J.D. Lassica on the West Coast is the co-founder of Our Media, which is part of the new podcasting concept. And our phone number is 1-800-433-8850, drshow@wamu.org. One of the dimensions of radio, Mark Fisher, that I'm very interested in, is the impact on politics. We've only glossed over the word Rush Limbaugh, but it was interesting to me that when the Republicans took over Congress 10 years ago, Newt Gingrich had radio talk show hosts from all over the country as his honored guests and said, I would not be Speaker. The Republicans would not have come back and taken over Congress if it weren't for conservative talk radio. Talk briefly about the importance of that dimension of this story.
Well, I remember at the 1996 Republican convention in San Diego, the prime place, the prime piece of real estate in that hall was given over to what they called Radio Row, where all the right-wing talk show hosts gathered together and were given first crack at all the best voices and the best newsmakers. And it's been very clear to the Republicans from the start of talk radio, from Rush Limbaugh's first success, that this was a way to speak directly to the American people, directly to their audience, without the filters of the traditional news media. And the Democrats have been very slow to pick up on that. Now, there's all sorts of academic research and wondering about why radio is particularly attuned to conservative viewpoints. And part of it is that, as some of the consultants will say, talk radio lends itself to people who take very firm, definitive stances. And so if you have a hard view, left or right, it's going to come across best on talk radio. And the left side of the ledger is only now beginning to pick up.
With Air America. How is that doing?
You know, Air America, I was very skeptical about early on because it had a very sort of queasy, neither here nor there feel to it, but it's gotten a lot tougher and it's a lot better radio, and that's the key thing that the best conservative talk show hosts understand that the liberals did not, which is that this is not about conservative or liberal. This is about showbiz. This is about putting on a good radio show, which is what Rush Limbaugh does. And so some of the folks on Air America are starting to do that, and it's very interesting to see that the company that's picking up Air America more than any other is Clear Channel, which just a few years ago was being, we were told, was a hardcore conservative company.
Let's go to some of our other callers. Jim in St. Louis, Missouri. Welcome to the Diane Rehm Show, Jim.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
Happy to have you.
Wanted to call in particular. I hear you talking about satellite radio, which has, I'm terrible on numbers, but 5 million combined listeners between XM and Sirius or whatever, and podcasts, which is tiny at this point. And there's internet radio, which has, I think it's 40 million listeners at this point. I'm calling from 3WK.com. We've been doing internet radio since 97. We have two stations that play thousands of songs each. You know, 100,000 unique people per month, that sort of thing. You can see our, you can look at webcastmetrics.com that does internet radio ratings. We're always in the top 10 there. So I just wanted to mention.
This is,
I have it, you know, I've heard you kind of touch on a little bit. I hear the word streaming, but not really internet radio.
When you talk about internet radio, you're talking about original programming as opposed to just listening to
opposed to simulcast of terrestrial original programming on the internet. And, you know, we have thousands of listeners at a time. It's predominantly still in-office listening, you know, Monday through Friday. You know, they're certainly listening at night, but technology is almost there. I mean, you can listen in your car, but there's no standard for it yet.
Okay, thanks very much. I must say, I listen to radio on the internet occasionally, and it's almost entirely to get baseball games. New York Yankee baseball games. You get every single one of them on the internet. Talk about this, Lou. You watch this scene. Comment on our caller.
Well, I think that this is really evidence of the point that I was making earlier, that because one technology comes into the into play and attracts listeners does not necessarily mean that commercial radio is losing listeners. I think what you're seeing is that people are spending more time listening to radio, whether it be on the internet, whether it be on satellite, and maybe to some extent on commercial radio. So as I was mentioning before, the pie is not static. But none of this detracts, I think, from the power of commercial radio. And going back to the point Mark was making, you saw it not only in 96, but even today, all talk show hosts, when there is an issue afoot in America, and talk show hosts get radio talk show hosts get involved, it can have a tremendous impact, and that's because people still do listen. They may be listening to internet radio, they may be listening to iPods, but they also listen, I think, to commercial radio.
Let's turn to Paul in Cincinnati. Welcome, Paul. Nice to have you on the Diane Dream Show.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I have an observation about terrestrial AM radio and also a question, and then I'll take my question or my answer off the air if you don't mind. And my observation is that I DX the AM broadcast band quite a bit, which means I try to identify distant radio stations and find out who they are and so on. And in listening around during the day and at night, I find it that the programming is so homogeneous since the days of megacasting started that if I don't catch the station identification, I can't tell who the station is. And my question is, based on my experience of trying to contact these stations that I hear and getting an answering machine or just maybe not even getting an answer at all, what mechanisms are in place to ensure that local emergency broadcasts can be made, if any?
Okay, thanks. Mark?
Well, you remind me of the now classic story about the North Dakota town where there was an emergency and there was a gas explosion in the middle of the night, and it turned out that the ordinary procedure was to call the local station so they could put the word out to people to not go out of doors. And as it turned out, there's nobody home at the local radio station. In fact, there's nobody home at any of the local radio stations because they're all owned by Clear Channel and they're all broadcasting overnight with programming that's being fed in from Minneapolis or other big cities, and that is the disturbing state of local radio, particularly in small towns across the country now. Unfortunately, that is not yet changing, and so that's one of the many reasons why people are fleeing to these new technologies, looking for something that is more local and feels more connected to their lives.
Although the FCC does have regulations on the emergency alert system that are supposed to be in play, and maybe there are some stations that are not complying, but there is supposed to be a system there for that purpose.
JD, are you still with us?
Yes, sure am.
I want to ask you a question about this, because I understand the glories of every individual being able to program their own radio station and podcasting being a on-air version of the blogs. Do you see something lost here? Mark has talked about the virtues of community, of people listening to a common station. When people only listen to what they pre-select and what they already are interested in, is something lost here while something is gained? Talk about that.
Well, people have said the same thing about weblogs for a long mm-hmm. time, that we're going to miss this kind of communal, kind of community-oriented kind of spirit that brings us and holds us together. The social fabric might be coming apart to that extent. And so there are two sides to the coin. You do lose a little bit of that, but on the other hand, there's so much more that you gain. There's a new generation of listeners out there who don't just want that kind of least common denominator. Least common denominator kind of content. So the internet generation, I think, has a certain different mindset towards this. They have all this media sort of coming at them from all directions, so that you're not gonna not know if something major happens in the country. That news is still gonna come to you through one of the other outlets. But so it's not so much filtering out this kind of common news that we all have to worry about and be concerned about, but it's more about funneling in so that you want the kind of content that that you can pull down from the internet. You want to be able to hear people's authentic voices instead of these kinds of commercial-driven, inauthentic kind of experiences that you're now getting with commercial media.
Okay, thanks. Let's turn to Dan in Dallas, Texas. Welcome to the Diane Rehm Show, Dan.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a 25-year veteran of commercial radio, and looking at the history, all the things that were supposed to kill commercial radio, starting with the 8-track and the cassette and the CD and now the iPod. I was also part of the internet experience in the late 90s when we were told that we were going to watch movies on our PCs and listen to radio through our PCs. My experience has been that technology does not drive listening habits. It, at first, starts as something of interest, as we see with satellite radio and iPods. But Bruce Springsteen had a song a few years ago that said, 500 channels and nothing to watch. So if you listen to satellite radio, you've got 120 different channels, but it's so sectionalized. iPods are so sectionalized. And if commercial radio, and I think they may be getting back to it, but if they can get their act together again, content is king, and it will drive listenership, and that's how they're going to survive.
Okay, Dan, stay on the line, because I want to bring in Jay Clark to talk to you about this. Jay, let's talk to Dan.
Well, Dan, I agree. Content is king, and that's if you take a look at where both the companies, both us and XM, are spending our dollars right now, it certainly is in the content arena. I mean, we now have we're now broadcasting every game of the National Football League, or for that matter, NBA or NHL.
All of which are lousy sports on the radio. The only good sport on the radio is baseball, and we all know it.
Oh, okay. If you say so, I would disagree. Looking at the number of sales we had out of the NFL deal, but the other thing is we're spending money on talent too, and we really believe that what's between the music is very important to our listeners. You know, we just did a deal with Howard Stern, which was a big national deal. All of our music channels have personalities on them, and we coach them and work with them to talk about the music and to understand the music and to talk about the listeners.
That's the direction it's going. But when XM came out, they said they were the next step beyond. And basically what they have been up until this point is commercial-free radio, the same jocks, the same presentation, and basically the same music. And I think that after the interest, the curiosity wears off, people are going to say, okay, show me the beat. Where's the content?
So I think what you have to do is go out and buy a Sirius satellite radio so you can hear the difference.
Okay, guys, thanks very much. I'm going to go to another caller here, and I want to take Anna from Ann Arbor, who has a different perspective on this. Anna, welcome to Diane Rehm Show.
Hi, thanks. I'm a DJ at a college radio station in Ann Arbor, WCBN FM Ann Arbor, and it's so strange to hear people just talk about commercial radio or internet radio, and there is such a thing as non-commercial radio on the college radio stations that don't have commercials at all, only announcements about community events or services in the community. So that's one part, but really the other part that I'm concerned about is that people are so interested in controlling what they listen to, and it doesn't sound like there's any conversation about people learning about new things, learning about new music, learning about events in your community that you don't know about, and such a concern on getting to hear what you want to hear when you want to hear it and not being open to all the kinds of local music that WCBN in Ann Arbor plays, all the kinds of music from the 1920s, the 1950s, that records that have, you know, been no longer printed, things that on vinyl that nobody can find anymore, and those gems, you know, that everybody just wants to control what they hear and hear Britney Spears or, you know, their favorite Beatles song. And that's a concern for me.
Anna, that's an excellent comment. We sure appreciate it. I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Stay on the line, Anna, because I want to get some of our reactions here. First, J.D. Lasica, Anna's point about if you control everything you hear, you're not open to new things that you don't know you're interested in. What about that point?
Well,
My point is that what I would love to hear Anna's radio station out here in San Francisco, and we shouldn't be bound by these kinds of geographic kind of restrictions anymore. So when I don't know exactly what kind of programming you have on your station, but if you make it available over the Internet or as a podcast, then I can go and download it to my iPod, and then, you know, my Stairmaster tomorrow, if you've got a program about diet and health tips, I can listen to that. You know, yesterday I was listening to a podcast about whether Howard Dean's ascension, you know, as party chairman is good for the Democratic Party.
But how do you know, J.D., how to go to that? If you're listening to a broadband radio or TV station, these things pop up, or you're even reading a newspaper.
Right.
These things that you didn't know you were interested in come across your radar. But if you're totally in control of what you select, how do you even know to go to Anna's radio station?
The serendipity factor is really still high. I mean, it's the same as when you're on the Internet. How many times do you not expect something to pop up on your screen? You can subscribe to certain kinds of channels. You're opening up yourself to a wider range of experiences. You can just start programming your devices randomly and see what happens, what you happen to download. So there, you know, basically it's all up to you to decide how much of this kind of randomness versus pre-selection that you want into your media diet.
Okay, Lou, you wanted to ask something.
Well, there's a certain historical irony here. When the FCC deregulated radio about 25 years ago, one of the driving forces was to enable radio stations to tailor their programming to selected demographic audiences so you could have niche programming. And the whole underpinning of niche programming is that there are people out there who know what they want. There's an audience out there that wants to listen to a particular kind of programming. And I think one of the things you've seen in a lot of radio stations is they've done that. They've tailored the programming to reach a particular demographic audience, which has preconceived ideas of what it wants to hear.
We got just another few seconds. Mark Fisher, you get the last word. On this whole question of control versus another kind of radio experience.
Well, we're in an era now of fascination with me media, with setting our own filters and creating our own websites and our own podcasts. The fact is that in the end, people do want to have some sort of communal experience, and so people will return to some sort of product that satisfies their need for the programming they want, but also makes them feel a part of something larger. Mm-hmm. And we're going to find whether that's on satellite radio or broadcast radio, that's where people are headed. Internet radio is already controlled largely by MSN and AOL. The big guys figure out how to co-opt the rebellion.
Have to be the last word. Mark Fisher from the Post Loop paper, attorney in communications law, Jay Clark from Sirius Radio, and J.D. Lassica from Our Media and author of forthcoming book, Darknet. Delighted to have you all on the Diane Rehm Show. Great conversation this morning.
Thank you.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkert, Elizabeth Terry, Ann Adams, Nancy Robertson, and Jonathan Smith. Engineers are Joe Gill and Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman has been on the phones for us. This program comes to you from American University right here in Washington, D.C. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane Rehm, and this is NPR, National Public Radio.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the Argosy Foundation Contemporary Music Fund, supporting the creation, performance, and recording of new music. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. From the Ford Foundation, whose magazine reports on how arts education is being used to boost student achievement in Texas schools at fordfound.org. And from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up Wednesday on the Diane Rehm Show on Capitol Hill, several Bush administration nominees are facing challenges from Senate Democrats. We'll hear the latest on the nominations of John Bolton, John Negroponte, and others, and discuss partisan strategies on both sides of the aisle in this latest round of politics. That's the Diane Rehm Show Wednesday.
The Diane Rehm Show continues into the 10 o'clock hour at KJAZZ, followed at 11 this morning by the news magazine Here and Now. This is listener-supported KJZZ Phoenix, a service of the Maricopa Community Colleges.
KJZZ is supported by University of Phoenix. Since 1976, University of Phoenix has helped thousands of working adults earn their degrees, with evening and weekend classes to accommodate your career, family, and life. 1-800-MY-DEGREE.
Coming up this hour, the life of First Lady Nellie Taft is the topic of the Diane Rehm Show. Coming up next. Sunny skies across the state, a warming trend underway will push us into the upper 80s here in the Phoenix area.